Welcome back. It's Lydia here. Before we jump in, I want to set a little bit of context on this episode. This podcast is all about having discussions around the meltdown-inducing questions that hit in the weird years. And one that I just keep coming back to, and a topic that I'm fascinated by, is relationships. I'm endlessly fascinated by what makes relationships work. Like, how do people stick together? Why do other people not? What makes a relationship successful? And in the world we live in now, where the comments on social media are an absolute cesspit, it feels like there's a lot of pressure on relationship dynamics, especially when it comes to gender. And then I came across Johnny when I was scrolling on TikTok. He had a video talking about his dynamic with his girlfriend, who's a really successful DJ. And in this space where there is so much toxicity, he was just there hashing it out and talking about how it interacted with his own views of success and his own views of masculinity. Now, my husband is also a successful DJ, so straight away I heard this video and I was like, okay, I want to listen to this. But what was really interesting for me was not just the parallels of that dynamic, but it was just how he was able to openly explore this topic and talk about, you know, masculinity and his own fears so openly and vulnerable. And it made me reflect on our own dynamics in my marriage, because when I first met Chris, I was like the breadwinner. He was making music, but it wasn't that financially viable. So I was very much the provider. And then over the years, the music started to take off, and then it took off quite rapidly. And suddenly this whole thing flipped, and like he was the really successful one, and he was the breadwinner, and he was the one everyone was kind of paying attention to in that traditional view of success. And for me, it did like bring up lots of feelings around what was my role and what was my version of success and like power dynamics and all this stuff. And it just made me think, seeing Johnny's video, like, wow, if I was a man, I feel like I would have felt that tenfold, and it probably would have been a really difficult change. In this episode, we talk about relationships and dynamics, and Johnny shares his experience of navigating a relationship whilst, in his own words, having quite a competitive mindset and actually having a lot of preconceived ideas of what masculinity means. We talk about how these ideas have changed over time and how maybe doing the inner work is actually the biggest glow up that you can have. If you're navigating different salaries in your relationships, or maybe different levels of ambition, or perhaps you're just trying to understand the way that gender roles are playing out in your own life, then I think you're going to enjoy this one. Also, how nice is it to have a different perspective on the podcast? This is actually the first time we've had a man join us, so I'm very excited for it. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Johnny, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited that you are the first man on the beige couch.
It's a massive honour.
Yeah, well, it's an honour to have you, for sure. I would love for you to give anyone who doesn't know you just a little bit of an overview.
Sure. So everyone then.
anyone who doesn't know you, you know.
So everyone. I'm Johnny Kay. I'm 32, from London, still live in London. Lucky enough to work in football and music. So I co-own a football media brand called Versus. I manage an amazing artist called Bowo, who's a singer-rapper from West London. So yeah, very lucky from a work perspective, and it's mostly what I do is work.
Is
so yeah,
do.
That's me.
So I also feel like I made you introduce yourself in a bit of a Love Island vibe. Johnny, 32, from London. I found you through TikTok, which everyone who's been on here is either a friend or someone I found through the internet, because you posted a video that I was listening to and I was like, I not only hardcore relate to this, but also I think it covered so many things that people are dealing with in the weird years. So you were talking about your relationship to your girlfriend, who is a successful DJ, and how that kind of how you felt about it when you first met her and your feelings since. So she's like kind of a big deal, right?
I think I would say so, yeah. I consider her to be a big deal. I think a lot of other people also consider her to be a big deal. So I think that's fair, yeah. And yeah, it's funny. I think when we first started going out, even before that, actually, when she first started showing that she was interested in me, I think it set off a lot around validation, you know, having this DJ that I sort of admired as a fan suddenly was interested romantically, and I was single, and it was quite a long, drawn out, protracted courtship initially, because she was touring.
Did she pick you out the crowd? Was she like?
No, we were like friends already. Okay. We actually met at an ex-girlfriend's house of mine years prior. Become friends every now and again when she was playing in London. I would go. That is a friend, like genuinely as a friend.
Yeah.
But I think the whole time, I think I've seen other people and stuff. But I did always think, if that was ever on the cards, that'd be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And then it was on the cards suddenly. So yeah, that's sort of how we met.
And you became an official groupie, wristband, access all areas.
Exactly, yeah, proper groupie boyfriend, yeah.
How did you feel, like, I mean, obviously my husband isn't obvious, some people listening to the podcast know, some don't, but my husband's also a DJ, and how was it for you, like, meeting her, and obviously you've seen her play loads of gigs and stuff, and then being like, oh, she's interested in me, were you like, this seems like a good vibe, I'm into this from the beginning?
I think so, yeah, like, if I'm really honest with myself, I think that I was just using her career, like for validation almost. I think that there's somewhere in me, I think there was desire at some point that sort of wished when I was younger, I took a little bit more risk and maybe became a DJ or an artist of some sort myself. I think a lot of music managers are people that if they'd taken a risk a little bit earlier, might have ended up as artists themselves.
Right.
And I never did that. And I think that when Lou and I first started going out, if I'm honest with myself, a lot of it was about, well, if I go out with this person, that must say something positive and something cool about me.
Yeah.
But as you know, because I spoke about it on the TikTok, the actual reality when I then got into the relationship was something a little bit different.
Yeah, I get that. I think for me, it was like a level of validation. Like now, that, you know, my partner's successful. I definitely, when I'm, you know, going through the backstage area and meeting people and they're like, oh, you're Chris's wife. Like it feels cool. But there's also always the flip side of like, well, a lot of other people are putting them on a pedestal as well. And there's like that kind of strange dynamic of people knowing your partner, like in a way that they wouldn't know just like a random person that you date in the street.
Yeah. And that's really it. And I think that I didn't realise how challenging that was going to be. I thought, really simple terms, I'm this boy with like, at that time, it's only 3 years ago, but I think it's still probably fair to say low self-esteem. I go out with this beautiful, successful, cool, well-known person, and that would just fill that sort of hole in my soul.
Yeah,
that's what I was missing. But actually the reality was it probably made it worse initially.
Really? In what way?
Well, I think that it was really cool at first, and I remember when we first started dating, she was playing a lot of shows in London and the UK, and I would go with her, and then she went on tour to America.
Ah.
In like the first, I think we'd been going out a month maybe, and she went on a 3-week tour of the States. And I was like very quickly like falling in love with this person. And then suddenly how shaky those sort of validation things were really started to come to the surface. And just to say as well, it wasn't just the validation and the fact I thought she was cool. Like I thought she was attractive, interesting, funny. I was like interested in her as a person. But the shakiness of the other bits around, oh, wouldn't it be cool to go out with a DJ, really came to the fore when she was then away traveling around America on her own. I found it really difficult.
What was the challenge for you in that?
I think the challenge for me was that I was worried, especially because it was early on, that she would meet, in my mind, another DJ, a producer, big American artist, that would come, sweep her off her feet, and then she would either be unfaithful or, more than unfaithful, leave me for someone else.
Yeah.
That was like the fear right at the start.
Yeah. I get that. I mean, I'm so lucky that when me and Chris met, we met 10 years ago, been together 9 years, and he was like making music in a basement in North London and literally never went out. So for me, I never had like any of those concerns really. And then by the time he became a DJ like properly, which was about 3 years ago, it's like you're suddenly thrust back to those weird feelings. It's almost like being back at the beginning of a relationship where suddenly you're like, oh, like he's going places all over the world without me. And obviously there's loads of fans around and there's people who are trying to impress them. And yeah, definitely plays on you start looking around and being like, am I as good looking as the other girls here? Or like, who's in the backstage? Like you become a little bit more aware. And it's sad, isn't it? That it makes you think about yourself like, oh, am I kind of good enough? Mm-hmm. Was that the feeling? Like, am I good enough?
Or that's where it all came from ultimately. It was that question, am I enough for this person? Will I be enough? Will I continue to be enough? But it's so funny because with hindsight, and it's slightly different to your situation, Lou was already a DJ. She was already touring. She was single.
Yeah.
She said, I want to be in a relationship with you. So right from the start, all of that stuff to her was obviously irrelevant. I just couldn't find that perspective initially. And I said it on the TikTok, as you know, that I ended up calling like a really close friend of mine and telling him, I actually just don't know if I can do this. I'm finding it that challenging. I don't know whether it's right for me is kind of how I framed it, to be going out with someone that has this lifestyle. I don't know whether I'm the sort of person that can kind of stomach that.
Mm.
And he was like, that's just total BS. He was like, if you like the person, you like the person. What do you mean you're not sure if the lifestyle is? He was like, forget all that. Give it some time. When you know you can trust her properly, all of this stuff will just fade away. He was like describing how in his current relationship, his partner is like she's doing a PhD at the moment, extremely smart, extremely attractive.
Mm.
And he was like, completely different circumstances. I had all of these same feelings. And he was like, give it 6 months, it will just fade away. And he was totally right.
God, isn't that so lucky that you rang that friend who, were they in that relationship at the time?
And they still are in that relationship.
It's lucky you rang that friend and not the friend, because it's so easy to be swayed by other people's feelings. And I think, you know, a lot of people listening to the podcast, we're all navigating relationship dynamics or trying to find a partner or with a partner. And it's so cyclical of like, I think the word power, I really don't like, mm-hmm. because it's more like, I don't know, power just has so many negative connotations, but it's like the energy within a relationship naturally shifts back and forth, especially like, you know, over years. So it's so lucky you spoke to someone who hadn't, you know, just been cheated on or they'd gone through this, or who had a really level head to be like, you know, chill.
Yeah, but I try and just reach out to the people whose advice I would actually take. Do you know what I mean? And I'm very lucky. And I think it is a sign of things kind of changing within our age group, where mm. I'm not the only boy out of my friendship group who can have proper adult conversations around insecurity and what we're scared of and sex and stuff like that. I've got a few friends I can call about that stuff and I can have real conversations with. I used to have friends that would give me some sort of other answer around that stuff, but
ditch them.
Don't really, still friends with some people like that, but I don't call them for advice in those sorts of moments.
That's fair.
Yeah,
I'm savage. I'm like, get rid of them. Before Lou, were you always into like strong women?
Oh, that is a really, really interesting question. My relationship history is a little bit messy, I think. Mm-hmm. My life is a little bit messy. Like, before Lou, it has been really messy.
Yeah.
And my romantic relationships were not immune from that mess. I would say that every person I've ever been in a serious relationship with has been a great person. But the issue that you described of power dynamics
mm-hmm.
has always felt off in one way or another. I remember in my last relationship before Lou, funnily enough, and I think this is one of the main drivers for the fantasy of going out with someone successful, was that things were first starting to happen for me in my career, in my previous relationship. I remember having not quite an argument with my partner at the time, but she started crying when I was on a work call.
Mm.
And the work call was getting some really good news. I was used to manage a different artist and we just received some great news. We were both like going crazy. Like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, our dreams are literally coming true. And when I came off the phone, my partner at the time started crying. And I said, what's wrong? And she'd taken it as a sort of reflection of the lack of motion in her life at that time. And that was like the beginning and the end of our relationship, because mm-hmm. I was so concerned for her and so hurt, actually, that she felt that way, but thought at the time, I can't be with someone, actually, if this is going to be how they react when things go well for me.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about that relationship is, in terms of my personal life, things were very messy and I was in a really, really dark place. I think the work stuff has always kind of gone all right because I've over-prioritised it, to be honest, over and above my general well-being. But yeah, some version of that has always been at play in all my relationships, where either I'm insecure or they're kind of insecure.
Yeah.
And my solution was like, if I go out with this person that just already has success and it's clear, maybe that'll be easier. It wasn't easier. It was just harder in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a relatable thing, isn't it? Of you watch people around you. And it's taken a lot of years, but, and I think I mainly learned this from my mum. It's like, if you can find joy in other people's happiness, it's like, there's just so much more happiness generally than what's happening to just you. But it is really difficult. And I think especially like when we get to an age now where you've got some people are going off and get married, some of them are like, you know, moving to other parts of the world for their work or like having amazing experiences, the competitiveness, it's almost impossible not to. And it's funny, me and my husband were talking about this, of we were talking about how men, like the male loneliness crisis, and I was kind of like, to be honest, I was ranting and maybe not being that sympathetic, because I was just like, if men are so lonely, why don't they just do what women do, which is that we just fucking build communities. Like, that's what we do. We go and co-work together. We join netball clubs, like all this stuff. And I was like, why can't men seem to do that? And like, do you think that we came down to competitiveness? Like, do you think that is a big factor?
Yeah. The system that has resulted in men's loneliness was built by men.
Yeah.
And the thing about men is every element of this society that men have kind of constructed, I do think ultimately is built down to competition.
Mm.
Everything from the economic system that we live in with capitalism down to the thing that men, what are they into? Sport, or what is that? It's competition. I think it's all about competition. And I think that men find it really hard to level with each other emotionally without getting triggered by that competition thing. And it's really interesting. The best friend that I described, the one who I rang about my relationship, even me and him have some honest conversations with each other sometimes, where I remember when I first got given equity in the business that I worked for, because I didn't actually start it. I joined really early in the hope that if I joined this thing early, maybe I'll get equity. And when I actually got awarded it, I remember calling him and telling him about it. And I remember about a month later, we spoke and he said, "I'm so jealous when you told me that. That you'd like taking this risk and it had like worked out for you." And my natural thought was, where's my X percent in some business, like by sort of, you know, serendipitous circumstances? And I was like, I totally get it though.
Yeah.
Because I think it really is so wired into us as men that everything is just a competition.
Do you think that was what was spilling over? Like, on one side, you have this kind of insecurity thing that, you know, inevitably, if you have a partner who's out in the world meeting hundreds of people for whatever reason, there's going to be like a layer of insecurity. People have it when their partner starts a new job, maybe, and it's suddenly like, oh, they're having work drinks, and actually some of the people at the work drinks are kind of cute. But so you've got that side of like, okay, am I good enough? Do you think the overspill of like being a man and the competitiveness was spilling into your relationship as well?
100%. It's like, why do we have to view the world, or why did I have to view the world through this lens? Where everything I'm looking at is all about, where do I fall against these other people? Am I worse or am I better? I think that's a really sad way to view the world. And I'm still trying to unpick that myself. But about the relationship thing, yeah, it was totally about that. My vision in my mind of the sort of people that Lou might be meeting was totally framed as, oh, well, if it was that sort of person, I probably, on this sort of like made up ranking system, actually, I might be slightly better than them. Or actually, I might be slightly worse than them. That's a very odd way of looking at the world. I say odd, it makes total sense because, like I said, everything around us, I think, wires men in particular to look at the world in that way. I think it bleeds into women as well, just in different areas.
Yeah,
what do you think?
I mean, I think we do it with looks, which is so terrible. But like, I know 100% that I'm guilty of, or I was guilty of, one of my husband's friends. She's both of our friends. She's a DJ. She's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time I met her, literally doing that, being like, is she prettier than me? Oh, she's really cool. She's really good at music. And then it's funny because she'll hear this and be like, lol. And then, and then it was that like ranking on those different aspects. And I think for women, it's often looks. And it seems like for men, it's often status driven around, I guess, power and status from money.
Yeah. Totally, it's money and power are the two things. And it's so difficult to work out how to unpick that, because I think that unfortunately we've gone so far now, talking about like thousands of years of civilization, of male value being placed on like money and power. I think that the sad truth is if you do try to totally remove yourself from that as a man, you are putting yourself at like a massive disadvantage when it comes to things like dating.
Okay.
Because I think it's just so inbuilt into everyone. I think that's the reality. It's not how it should be.
Right.
But it's how it is. I think it's much easier for me to start to unpick that stuff now because I'm in a long-term secure relationship where it's become really clear to me that Lou loves me for who I am. If you're a single man right now who's, say, between the age of like 25 or 35 and you're suddenly going to decide, actually, I'm going to remove myself from societal expectations, I'm going to let go of the high-powered, high paid job and I'm just going to go and do something else, the reality of the society we live in, they're going to find it much harder to find a partner.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you work out as a man what to do with your life and not what your values should be when we kind of know it's wrong, but we've gone sort of too far down that path now?
Yeah, completely. I read some data, I think it might have been from ONS or YouGov, and it said that 49% of men are increasingly unsure of what society wants from them. And there's so much conversation around that of, you know, our economics have shifted. And now there's a reality, as you said, of women, they tend to date, we call it like upwards, mm-hmm. like women date upwards. They tend to date someone who's equal or more educated than them. And they tend to date someone who's equal or more financially stable than them. And it's a sad reality because now women outperform men at every stage of education. So you've got women coming out of university, they're really educated, they're going into good jobs, and they can't find the men who are more educated and financially viable for them. But then people say, like, and this is what pisses me off in the manosphere, is people be like, women want a 200k job. And it's true, but to your point of the structures that sort of stand on all of us were built by men. And the reality is that often women want to date someone who's more financially stable because we take such a hit if we choose to have kids mm-hmm. or, you know, we can't. Again, I was looking at the data into this because I bloody love it. And I think it was a 40% women in the decade after they have children, they have on average a 40% decrease in their revenue from work over a 10-year period from having children. And it's partly they're going to part-time work. They don't go for such demanding roles. But it's like, yeah, well, if you're earning 40% less, you have to be with a partner, male or female, who earns 40% more, because otherwise your net, like, standard of living is going down.
Exactly, yeah.
It's rough.
It's very rough.
That was a long old rant of mine.
But it's really interesting to hear it so backed up in data. But it's like, how do you build, like, a vision, I guess, for what you would want modern masculinity to look like when we have to balance it with the reality of just, like, the cold, hard facts around trying to maintain a decent living standards, you know, trying to go out with someone that can actually provide for you and your children.
Yeah.
You know, all of that stuff is so complicated, I think.
How in your story did you go from, like, being a bit insecure about this and feeling a little bit competitive to, like, where you are now? Like, what did that look like? How did you drop some of those feelings?
Oh, that is such a good question. The first thing I'll say is that I'm a work in progress. I have not completely dropped out all of these ideas and competitiveness. If you were to ask Lou, she would tell you I'm, like, one of the most competitive people she's ever met. It's still in me. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the thing that has helped me massively, and I've kind of already said it, was finding a person who I know that genuinely just loves me for me. And then doing enough work to get to a point where I could really believe that. Because the truth is, every other adult relationship I've been in, I actually believe the ones where I was, like, actually in love. The people I was with really did actually love me for who I was. The problem lay with me. I was the one that couldn't accept that. It was nothing to do with them. And I think that this time round with Lou, it was like, how many times am I going to go around this same circle where I find this amazing person who loves me deeply and I kind of bomb the whole thing because I can't actually accept that level of love? How did I get to a point of to accept that level of love? The same way that everyone does. I still go to therapy twice a week, face to face. For me, I had to give up drugs and alcohol because I use that as a crutch to manage my emotions. Not everyone has to do that. That's just my story. Same thing with nicotine. And then start with, like, a much rawer base. You know, when I take away that stuff, what's sort of left over? And the stuff that was left over was someone who from childhood was just, like, really broken and really hurt. And for my own, you know, reasons that people would term as trauma, found it difficult to accept love. It was very about starting the work internal and then it bleeding into the external. And, you know, on my TikTok even, I try and sort of give this message out a lot, which I think that there is a reality that men, for the reasons you described around pregnancy and having children in heteronormative relationships, do have to be a provider to some extent financially, potentially. If those are the things you want, this is my experience, and you want, like, abundance financially and the career stuff and, like, some self-esteem and some real security, like internal security, all of the work starts internal. There is a different way of doing it, like the Donald Trump methods, where you do no internal work and you just, through pure self-will, just, like, take over the world, harm as many people as you want in the process, have no peace of mind whatsoever, and it just never stops. But I do think there's another version where you really find out who you are and you get some internal stability, and then the rest of life starts getting a lot easier.
Yeah. I mean, well, that second version is, like, you've got to be the 0.0001% of ruthless and ambitious and careless and a mixture of terrible traits and good traits in some ways. But yeah, that's so interesting. It is kind of that, it's so cheesy, isn't it? But it's that age old thing of like, you've got to love yourself before you love someone else.
Totally. And I didn't when Lou and I first started going out. And I think that that is one of the most, it's probably the most challenging thing I've done in my whole life to date. Getting into another relationship, another serious relationship with another amazing woman, but actually having that awakening whilst being in the relationship of, I don't actually love myself. And if I don't do some work on this now, I'm a ticking time bomb. This relationship will actually end the same way all of my relationships have ended, which is generally has been when I was a little bit younger, infidelity, me being mean until the point that the relationship comes to an end, or doing the classic avoidant thing of just like lining up some other person who like fulfills my fantasy idea of what the other person doesn't. And then when the time comes, cutting it off one day and then immediately going out with someone else. I finally just got a little bit of a moment of clarity where I thought, I will forever actually repeat this pattern unless I do something about it now. And I think that Lou, as a partner, was just incredibly understanding when I actually spoke to her about this stuff. And I said, I can see how these patterns are starting to emerge again. And this is already when we'd already actually moved past the trust issue. I already totally trusted her at this point.
Yeah.
It was actually nothing to do with the trust. It was all about me. It's like, can I actually accept the love that this person has given me for the first time?
Mm.
It was hard work. It has been hard work.
I completely relate to that. Out of interest, do you know much about attachment theory?
I do know about attachment theory, yeah.
Do you, for listeners who don't know that, it's essentially that the relationship, your first relationships you have with your caregiver, so generally your parents, that dynamic sets the foundations for the rest of your ongoing relationships. And I was a classic anxious attached, like child of divorce, dad left very suddenly, very like fearful of that. And so with Chris, I always was like doing the protest behaviours of like, just stupid shit, like acting out to validate, like to check if they would come back.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it protest behaviors because you kind of, you do something that purposely tries to put someone off because you want to see if they come back. And then, you know, when you do that enough, it goes one of two ways. The person leaves because they're like, fuck this. Or they are like committed to it. And then the other person actually becomes more secure. So the anxious, once their needs are validated, they become secure and they stop doing that. From like your understanding of attachment styles, do you know what yours is or what it was?
I know mine's avoidant.
Interesting.
My family history is that when I was a kid, my father died of a drug overdose. He was an addict. I'm also an addict. Don't use drugs anymore, though, thankfully. And it was complicated, right? My dad was really unwell. He ended up dying when I was 7. And then in my relationship with my mum, she was dealing with the grief of the death of her husband. Mm. So our relationship, I wouldn't say was the most tactile, and I received a lot of love. I'd say not in traditional ways. My mum did her best to make it work, and she made it work in the end. As a result, I have generally jumped from relationship to relationship, seeking out what my therapist would say is that like maternal love. But then when it gets to any real vulnerability, I suddenly retract.
It's too much.
It's too much. I've seen so many good TikTok videos that are a perfect representation of what I typically have done, which is I turn up randomly one day in a happy relationship and I sit my partner down and I say, for reasons that I don't quite understand, I'm actually leaving this now. And the partner opposite me says, I don't get it. We've got this amazing relationship. We're building this amazing life. And I'm like, no, actually, it's not. It's actually never been right for me. And it's just all about intimacy.
Mm.
And that, you know, I could feel that stuff starting to come up with Lou, where my mind was starting to say, oh no, actually, this isn't quite right. And Lou and I actually very almost broke up with me following that classic path. And I think had I not been in therapy, the relationship would have ended.
Mm.
But Lou, to her credit, said, the reasons why you're saying you think this relationship should end are just very unclear. And I don't really understand what you're saying. And I'd had therapy the previous day. And my therapist had said to me, I don't think you realise that when you talk about the reasons why you want to end this relationship, you're not actually saying anything. To you, I think you think it's like really clear. But the words you're saying, like you're not actually giving any real reasons why. And it's this avoidant thing coming up again, where you're getting into real intimate territory now. And there's something deep inside you that says now's the time to run. But this time, you know, I didn't run. But I think the thing my therapist was important to stress as well was like, if you don't do this work now, in therapy, in recovery, you may well never do it.
Mm.
So I really had to just pull my socks up and be brave and give it a proper shot.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, statistically, we see that the older you get, especially when you're in your kind of 30s or so, a lot of the men in the dating pool are avoidant in their attachment style. And that really like makes sense to me of what you're saying, of just that you have to do the work. Like, so many people are going to be facing this. It's like they're trying to find a partner and they meet a lot of people who, oh God, I have so many girlfriends who've had rug pulls. Like, they think things are going great. And then suddenly it's like, yoink, no, it's not working out. The guy disappears completely. Yeah. What do you think it is in our society or in the way that we're having dynamics with each other, which is causing this or making men not do the work, I guess?
I think that there's nothing in our society at the moment that properly encourages men to be vulnerable. And for me, I can only speak on my experience. The entire issue that caused me to be a classic rug puller was that I had no ability to be properly intimate. I think I could do the love bombing. I could do the really passionate honeymoon period. The honeymoon period, I could go on for like 2 years.
Mm.
But I think the next bit, that's actually what real intimacy looks like. Living with a partner, turning up day in, day out, good days, bad days. Do I have the ability to turn up and just say, I had a shit day today.
Mm.
I'm scared because I'm worried the business is going to fail. I'm scared that the artist I manage is annoyed at me. You know, can I actually just do that? What, in some ways, I think for a lot of women, because women are so much better at it typically, is actually just basic friendship, intimacy, relationships. My experience of boys and men is we're just so unpracticed at doing that. And I'll tell you something interesting. I remember, obviously, a big thing for me was losing my dad, right? For a long time, I sort of wished I hadn't lost my dad. And I remember having a conversation with my three best friends very late at night when we'd been on a night out. We'd come back to someone's place. And the conversation wasn't about me. It was about them and their dads. And all three of them talked about how their dads just never spoke to them about anything to do with emotions at all. And it really shifted my perspective, where I thought, my whole thing has always been like, oh, everything would be so different if my dad was around. Would it have been? Based on the experience of my friends with their fathers, I'm not so sure. And I think that that is where the root cause is, where boys' dads aren't openly talking to them about just those regular ups and downs of having emotions and that being okay. I think the effect of that you then see is the rug pulling. You know, boys get into situations, suddenly it feels intimate and it's like, I can't do this. You know, they're repelled. Mm. I've been there so many times. It feels like a genuine repulsion. And your brain can play all sorts of tricks on you. I need to be single, and you know, I need to sleep around, I need to do whatever in order to get away from this. And it feels so rational at the time. This is bullshit.
And it's all just that fear of being raw.
Fear of being raw. That's my experience anyway.
It's sad, isn't it? Because it's such a big conversation at the moment. And, you know, we see that young men are really, like, there's a lot of challenges for Gen Z, and that women are becoming much more socially and politically left, and men are rapidly becoming more socially and politically right. And on the right, there is a lot of these like very extreme narratives. It's interesting, actually, something you voice noted me in our kind of pre-chat before this chat, was that you'd said that there's such an abundance now of toxic masculinity, and that had that been around when you were younger, you would have been the prime candidate for it.
I think I would have been in trouble. Because my self-esteem was cripplingly low. And I think that had there been like such a clearly marketed solution, because that's what they do really cleverly, is they take these boys who have, like all teenage boys, have insecurities. And I think when I was around, there was no one saying, are you an insecure teenage boy? Because I have the solution to that. I can tell you exactly why that is. I think had I been the version of a 15 or 16-year-old that I was, and there was someone very loudly shouting, saying, I can tell you why you're insecure. I can tell you what the problem is. And the problem is women. And this is what they're doing. And this is how you're never going to succeed. And actually, this is how you can succeed. Mm. I think I would have really bought into it. I think I could have really bought into it.
It feels sometimes like we're shouting into like different worlds when it comes to men and women. Because women are always saying like, we just want you to be less toxic. We want you to be more open. We want to trust you. We don't want to feel fearful of men. But then all men are hearing from the like manosphere, which as a term, I don't know if I love it. It feels really negative. I think men should be able to have online spaces where they share things and it not be that way. But there is this whole kind of manosphere of really negative views where it's just being saying, like, you don't need that. Like, don't listen. We know you want women, but the women don't know what they want. You can't trust them. So you should listen to us. And the answer is always someone who drives a Bugatti and has loads of muscles. And it is like, it's kind of bizarre to me that we've gone from like David Bowie and like, you know, these quite effeminate leader men into this very, very narrow view of masculinity.
Yeah. It's very, very odd. Although it kind of makes total sense as well. You know, we have talked about what I believe are the sort of root causes that have caused men to sort of be that way. I think when you think about what those root causes are, it almost makes total sense, actually, that the people would listen to is people with loads of money, with muscles. It's just like the sharpest example of, I don't even know what of, but just of like the living embodiment of like the cure to the insecurities almost. It's very, very odd, but it also makes total sense to me. And the unfortunate reality is kind of what I was getting at earlier. As if you were a man and you did follow these men in the manosphere and you did actually follow their instructions to get wealth and status, you would find it a lot easier to get what you would term like an attractive partner. Now, for me, is that the sort of person I'd want to be with? Not necessarily. But if you're like a 16-year-old boy and you sort of follow this doctrine and you end up becoming really wealthy and you do have muscles and you have a fast car, the society we live in, you're going to have it way easier.
Yeah, that's true. But then you have the flip side where I think it was Ricky Gervais who ages ago said, like, no one will believe the people who say when you have money and wealth, you're not happy, because they say, well, you've got money and wealth, you don't know what it's like. And it's like the only person who can tell you that money and wealth doesn't, or money and power doesn't make you happy, are the people who have money and power. It's like this weird paradox of you have to see it to believe it, maybe.
Yeah. You have to experience it to know it. Mm. It's tricky stuff, because I do think as well, I think one of the things that is inbuilt in men somewhere, and it probably is a societal thing, but I do think building something and having a purpose does make people happy. And the easiest thing to direct purpose at and to build something is ultimately like business and finances, because we live in a capitalist society where it's dictated that that's the one thing, weirdly, that we do most of our time. So it's like trying to unpick all of that to find a place where you can be a man, be emotionally open and vulnerable and honest, but also have something to build and work towards and provide emotionally but also financially. Trying to find that, but that's what I'm trying to find. Trying to find that balance, so difficult, without it bleeding into, and this happens to me all the time still, oh, actually, I'm the greatest person on earth because I've had this business success today, or because I've earned a little bit more money this month because this deal came in, or whatever, and I can just slip back into that. Or sometimes, like, oh, Lou, you need that thing, I'll buy that for you. And it just, again, it just fuels that very traditional notion of what it means to be a man. And that sometimes can then block, same day, actually, if I had something difficult happen. On that same day, am I going to go up to Lou and say, oh, I know I did that earlier, but I really need to talk to you about this? I think you're much less likely to do that. So it's still, for me, it's still very confused, you know. And the other thing is, I'm not going to stop chasing money and career success. I'm not going to sell my shares in the business, stop managing Bowo, give it all back and say, actually, no, I've realised it's actually all a bit toxic now. No.
Yeah.
And it's like balancing that chase, because I find it so fun. It's not so much the end goal. The chase of building, it's like the funnest thing I do. It's why I do that with my time. But then trying to balance that with the self-work around learning to become truly vulnerable and truly intimate with Lou. I don't even know. Is there a conflict there? What do you think?
Well, the way you said that was interesting to me, because you said, like, you're not going to give it all up to have those things. And I think that is how it's positioned, is that if you're not the successful business owner, like, who drives a nice car and has good money, then you're like a soy boy who's got nothing, and you're all in your feelings, and you're so in your feelings that you can't have a business. But the reality, I think, is that a lot of truly successful people use their like emotional maturity and understanding, because that is an important thing in business. Like, being able to read somebody else's emotions, to understand what they want, and to come to a place that, yeah, you can manipulate people if you want to, but ultimately, in the end, those kind of deals don't last that long. People fall out if there's too much ego involved. But it's interesting that you saw it of this or this, but then you said you need the the balance, right? So that's where we're trying to get to as a society, I guess.
Yeah, I think it is.
Like, you can have the nice car and the things, but you need to do the inner work to be driven by the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it's that. It's interesting because I think people will be pulling apart their own dynamics of their relationships, I think, listening to this and thinking about, like, even thinking about how masculinity manifests. Like, do you have a definition of what you class as masculinity? Like, your own personal view?
I think it's a really big question. I think the masculinity is fluid.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is I do actually think there is an appropriate time for every element of masculinity. I think that, for me, there is a time, actually, when providing, not just for Lou, but for my mum and my brother and my sister, is appropriate. But other times, openness and vulnerability is also a really important part of masculinity that I'm learning to practice as well.
Mm.
And I feel like there's a, what's the word?
Continuum?
Yeah, like a continuum, really. And I think that both the like more traditional elements of masculinity that our society's been built on, they actually do have a role to play. They're just overemphasized for most people at the moment. And then other parts that I think that some people would consider almost feminine, I actually consider them also part of masculinity around openness and vulnerability. They also form a part of my masculinity. I think it's we'll use continuum. Of different things, really. And I think that's always changing for people as well.
Yeah.
Based on circumstances. I don't think there is or should be a fixed idea of what masculinity is or looks like.
That's true. Yeah. I hadn't ever thought about it as being a kind of flexible, changing thing. But that thing of providing is really interesting because that's what you hear coming up all the time is like women want someone who can provide for them. But I think the word provide always is associated to material things.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, these guys get on Twitter, they make young boys feel like shit, and then they sell them a course about how to not feel like a loser. And then, you know, maybe that person changes, maybe they don't. But ultimately, it's just like a lovely system of people feeling bad about themselves to make money, in the same way that the world makes women feel bad about how they look to make money.
Mm-hmm.
But this idea of a provider outside of those financial terms is like, to me, it's providing a sense of peace. Like when I was thinking about masculinity, I've always felt with my husband, and when we met, I paid for much more stuff. He was a musician. He was, you know, in the basement in King's Cross. He wasn't a touring DJ. He wasn't making loads of money. And I used to like pay for a lot of things because I made more money. But I always saw him as like this very masculine person because he created this sense of peace, which was like providing me the ability to feel calm and loved, and even just to like, it kind of sounds like what you've gone through with like having that relationship that's stable that allows you to then do things because you're provided with a foundation. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And this has been my own big revelation over the course of my relationship. So when I first went into therapy, my therapist, big thing, you undervalue the level of stability that Lou gives you and how that gives you a platform to go and achieve everything you want in your life.
Mm.
I found that very difficult to identify with at first. That just couldn't be more true. And like my story, it's actually quite similar to your husband's. We find an impressive, strong, available woman, and look what happens.
Mm.
We go on to become successful. It's no coincidence. And I think that that's like the message I always want to get out there. So people now, some people like look at me and they're like, you have such like an exciting, cool life, well-paid, football, music, football matches, gigs, you know, going all around the world, festivals, all that stuff. My story, my truth is that has only come from two things. Number one, it all started from the inner work. But the other big fact is Lou. Mm. Finding someone who actually proved to me, I can really trust, I can really love, I can really be loved. I get to that place and suddenly my life flowers. Do you know what I mean? And like, yeah, I owe Lou a lot for that reason. I think your husband owes you a lot for the exact same reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of symbiotic, I think, about it. After all these years, it's like I supported him when he was exploring and, you know, going after music as his dream. And now he's supporting me more as I'm like going after my dream with various things. Have you heard of the dependency paradox?
No. Tell me more.
Because I think that is so interesting. I only learned it the other day. Yeah, so there's this thing called the dependency paradox, which is that when your emotional needs are met and you can depend on someone, you're more likely to be adventurous. And it manifests all the way from, if you think about a child and they have a parent who's very, very secure, and every time they fall down in the park, they run back and their parent gives them a hug. Whereas if you have a parent who's very volatile and you never really know what you're going to get from them, you want to stay really close because you're like, I need to know they're there because I don't want them to leave and I don't want them to be angry. So I'm going to stay with them and pacify them. And you see it also in relationships of, if you have someone who makes you feel very grounded, that person then knows that they can go off and explore their own things. And to me, when I heard that, I was like, wow, that is exactly how I feel in my relationship. And I think it's a really lovely dynamic for people to get to. It's like, it's kind of, don't hold someone so close that you suffocate them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lou's never suffocated me. I'm so lucky in that.
Mm.
But what you're describing my relationship, you're describing me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that thing of when you have a partner who you can really rely on, they can go out and explore and people like achieve their dreams, exactly as you've said, because you've got that like safe space to run back to. I just thought it was a nice thing. I related to it.
I relate to it massively.
Yeah. I'm going to go into some bits from the listeners because we always ask out a couple of questions and see what people thoughts, feelings, hot takes on this. And I asked about kind of dynamics in relationships of power. And this was a woman who wrote in, she said, my husband is more successful than I am in his career. He's older than I am and we work in different industries, but I won't be as successful when I reach his age. He wins tons of awards, he gets loads of recognition and I don't. He also makes much more money. Sometimes it feels like coming when it comes to decision making from where to go to dinner, what kind of house we want, that he gets more voting power. And while this has never been spoken rule per se, I just feel like I don't have any ground to stand on since he's the one paying for most things. It's an interesting dynamic. I don't think he's even aware of it. And he would say he would never do it on purpose. I think it's part of my own worries of not living up to his success. That in itself is a hard pill to swallow.
That's really interesting. I'd say it's very clear that the husband obviously works in a world where he likes to make decisions. It's no surprise to me. It bleeds from his work life into his personal life. It's also no surprise to me he doesn't think about it.
Yeah.
And I can almost guarantee that husband is absolutely not thinking about the way that dynamic exists, because that's just how their life is.
Yeah.
And they probably like it that way. It's interesting. I can understand why someone would feel insecure in that environment. But as a man hearing that, I can tell you almost certainly that that man will not be thinking about how these dynamics are sort of playing out and he makes more decisions. You know, these dynamics always exist for a reason on both sides, I think, is the really interesting thing. And I think on some level, I would hazard a guess, not knowing this woman, that she likes being with a decision-making, successful man. And the man likes to make decisions. So therefore, the dynamic plays out. He makes most of the decisions and that's completely okay.
Yeah.
If that's what both people want. But I obviously totally understand why someone would just every now and again think, oh, am I going to be viewed negatively in some way? But if she was to raise this, I think she said it herself. I think he wouldn't even be aware. He just wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Because that's just what his life looks like. That's how he likes his life. And that's the life that he's built.
Especially raising it like as her point that she said, like it's a hard pill to swallow because she might not get to that level of success. I think that's something just as we get older is that doors close. Like I've talked about this before. It's like you make choices, right? You choose to be the partner of a successful person or you choose success and then maybe your relationship dwindles as a result of that is that there's never kind of every single part of your life is full to 100% in the best way.
Well, to that point, I was going to say earlier, apparently one of the best indicators of a relationship failing is one person becoming successful. It's a very common reason for divorce. Either side. Two people start going out. It's why your ability to sustain your relationship is really impressive. Two people start going out and one person, having been on like a reasonably similar level, has massively outsized success for a number of reasons. It's a very common reason why relationships fail.
Mm.
With men, suddenly they think they have a lot of choice. It's the classic thing. They think they can upgrade.
Yeah, that is the classic thing, isn't it? It's such a sad reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. Something to be fearful of. No, I'm joking. I also asked out around masculinity because I was really interested in this. Is I asked people what their view of masculinity is. And someone said that masculinity is not fearing your feelings. And I was like, interesting. That's from a woman.
Mm.
somebody else had said, this sounds weird, but there's something different between boys and being a man. It's hard to put it into words, but when I met my boyfriend, I realized he was a man and not a boy like the others I dated. It wasn't about money or power. It was more about a level of knowing oneself. In general, it's hard to see masculinity and not see toxicity at the moment.
I think that's bang on. Hopefully it's come across, constantly saying it. It's all about the internal work. What does the internal work lead to? Knowing yourself. I think that when you meet someone that knows themselves, it like stinks. Do you know what I mean? You can smell it on them. When someone, you know, and whether that manifests itself as someone who's confident and outgoing, whether that's someone that's quietly confident, it doesn't really matter. It kind of smells the same. You can really sense it, and you walk around and you think, that person, they know themselves. And I think that I really buy into that. I think that is what masculinity is about. And I think that not even just masculinity, femininity as well. I think it works both ways. I buy into what that person said.
Yeah, that's so funny because in my head I went from, okay, confidence. It's almost the difference between confidence and arrogance. Mm-hmm. Is that I love programs like Married at First Sight. I'm such a sucker for it. I think it's because I did psychology as my degree. I've always just loved watching people and like the dynamics between people. There used to be this show, I can't remember what it's called. Oh, it's called Child of Our Time. I don't know if you ever watched that growing up. It was a psychologist and they followed these kids over like 20 years of their lives. I think they might still do it. But I just love watching people's dynamics. And that idea of can you spot arrogance versus confidence, for me, is such a big giveaway. I feel like I can smell when it's not real. Mm. Like in the way that you can smell confidence, for me, I can straight away be like, that girl is really loud and out there because she's super insecure about herself and she's worried people aren't going to like her. Or like with a guy, be like, how much he talks about his work tells me that he's really unhappy about his work and he doesn't feel like he's good enough. And it's a fine line, right, between arrogance and confidence. Do you feel that?
Totally. Big ego is always for supporting low self-esteem. I think if you'd met me 3 years ago before Lou and I went out, did I talk about work too much? Yeah. Did I massively overplay my sort of pretty limited achievements? Yeah. Did I always make sure I was the loudest in the room? Yeah. Why? Because I had crippling low self-esteem. People could sniff it out as well.
It's interesting. We've all got to do the work. The last person who wrote in about this, it was a man, and he said that masculinity is being yourself and not letting some other dude's idea of masculinity stop you. Nothing is less manly than another man pressuring you into being someone else.
That is really good. It plays into the previous point around being yourself, knowing yourself, being yourself. I think that really hits at something.
Yeah. But I love that idea of like true masculinity is someone else can't change your mind. And it's not necessarily about being stubborn, but it's like if you hold, in my view, like holding your ground of having, you know, a strong sense of self, but also having strong values and strong opinions and holding yourself in a way that you're like, okay, this is what I stand for.
Yeah.
If all the boys are being like, oh, you know, these girls are over there, let's go have a chat. I know we've all got girlfriends, but let's just do it. That doesn't feel like a masculine thing because you're letting somebody else tell you what to do.
Totally.
Do you struggle with that out of interest with when it comes to things like being sober? How does that play in?
It's been a real journey, to be honest, like with my close friends. To be honest, no. The truth is we live in a different time. I can't even try and pretend to make out that I've ever been put under any sort of peer pressure to like not to drink or to take drugs once I said I was going to stop. I think that was a reality for people 10 years ago. I just don't. I think in modern society, working in the creative industries, there's so many people that have trodden the path already for me. Most places, of the bigger companies I've worked, there was always someone who'd already gone sober whilst they worked there, done the big shock thing, got everyone used to the fact, oh yeah, people have problems with drugs and alcohol and now there's a solution so they can stop. It's not my experience at all, to be honest, that I ever felt under any kind of pressure. The only pressure I ever had to drink or use drugs again just came from myself.
Yeah.
Because that's just my solution. That's what I want to do. My default,
the crutch,
is that I just want to drink and use drugs to just numb emotionally. That still comes up now. That's what I'm battling against. But it comes up in other ways. Like the most obvious one, don't know if you can tell, I had a hair transplant last Thursday. Literally.
Really? Last Thursday?
Went to Turkey, got a hair transplant. And it's like one of those things, certain I wanted to do it, spoke to Lou about it. And it was just like, what are other... I think it was more boys going to say about it. It wasn't so much about women, because I'm in a relationship. It makes it easy to block that noise out.
Yeah.
What are other men going to say about it? No one in my friendship group's done it. And I went and did it. It was really funny. I was in the airport talking to two other guys who just got it done. And they were both like, yeah, I'm taking a month off work so that I can like recover, or I can have a bit of hair regrowth. Then I can kind of go back to work and like almost pretend nothing's happened. They're like, when are you going back? I'm like, I'm going back on Monday. And not only have I gone back on Monday, I did a presentation in front of 40 people yesterday. I did one probably just then, I was telling you, in front of like 20 people with people I know in the room. And it's just like, do you know what? This is my biggest test of what this person would potentially call masculinity.
Yeah.
I wanted to do this thing for myself. It's what I wanted to do. I'm going to come back. I'm just going to own it. And if people want to think what they're going to think, they can do it. But I know just what I wanted to do. It's been testing. It's been testing emotionally, internally. Yeah. But I just thought, and then even like, but it's funny, I did these two big meetings, one today, one yesterday. Then I came here, I'm like, this has been filmed. I was like, I just don't care.
Yeah.
It's taken so long to get to that sort of place though, where I can do things for myself, even visible things, and not worry about what other people think.
I love that. Yeah. I've never even thought about the judgment that men must get, because I'm so pro hair transplants.
Oh, there we go.
I'm like, why would you not? It's amazing. Like, yeah. What an amazing technology. I'm like, 100%, I will go and do that one day. Like, I get a little...
You got a little bit of...
I get a little bit of this going on, and I'm like, one day I'll get that fixed.
Yeah.
No, I love that. I'm going to end on a segment that we call Yes or Mess, and it's rapid fire. You are allowed to expand on it, though. We always do rapid fire on it. So five questions. If you're into it, yes. If you're like, no, not at all, mess.
Mm-hmm.
The term alpha male,
mess. I that just evokes too much traditional old BS stuff about what a man is meant to be. I just don't think it's helpful or healthy.
The term toxic masculinity,
yes. I think it's a good representation of the negative sides of what we've talked about through this whole podcast, of what people can misuse masculinity to mean, and I think toxic masculinity captures that essence in a good way.
Do you think we should be using it alongside positive terms for masculinity?
Yeah, I think that is the little bit that goes missing, and we've talked about it through this whole podcast. It's like, right, we've got toxic masculinity. I think it's pretty clear what that is. I think the whole reason we're almost doing this podcast is like the question, what is positive masculinity? No one knows. I don't know.
That's the exciting thing though, isn't it? It's like, whilst it's very depressing in lots of ways at the moment, I think we're just in the sticky point. I'm generally quite a positive person in that I do believe we will work it out as a society, and men won't feel lost anymore and women won't feel fearful anymore. Like, I do feel like we'll get there. Fingers crossed.
That's a very optimistic view.
Women making the first move on dates.
Yes. I'm not even willing to comment on that one. That one doesn't deserve comment. Next question.
Male-only spaces.
Yes, I do think so, yeah. I think the dream that, given the current state we're in, that in like mixed spaces, men and women, talking about for straight men, that they're going to suddenly be able to open up around women, where I can tell you from my experience, it's the romantic and sexual dynamics where the insecurities come up more than any other. It's not realistic. You want men to become more positive around their masculinity and not toxic. The only way that's going to happen, actually, man on man to begin with, a man who actually for whatever reason has had somewhat of like an awakening around, actually, I think these ideas we've been holding on to around having to make loads of money, sleep with loads of women and garner loads of power, I don't think that's where happiness lies. I think that's a conversation that has to happen between one straight man to another straight man. And I think for that reason, male spaces are important.
And also, I mean, it's nice to hear that, because there are voices like obviously your own. Definitely there's people like Jordan Stevens coming out. I feel like we're having these conversations now and we're finally getting like some amazing male role models at every level of visibility, which, if you don't have role models, like, who are you supposed to look up to?
No, totally. Yeah. The problem is, though, and you probably saw this with my TikTok and you see it with Jordan Stevens, all the people that engage with that sort of content, it's just women. It's just all women.
Yeah.
And I just sometimes wonder, because you've seen my TikTok, it's mainly like football content, and I use the football content as a hook so I can then speak to boys about these like more pertinent issues. But then when I do the videos about the more pertinent issues, and they some of them can really travel, over 95% of the engagement is from women. And I just think, what are you thinking? All these young boys I see in all the comments on my other TikToks, you're seeing this probably, but what are you actually thinking about it? Do you care? Are you engaging with it? I don't know. And I see it on Jordan Stevens as well. You look at the comments, it's just all women.
Mm. I think there's two things. One to me is like, don't ever underestimate your power of the silent lurkers.
Mm.
Like women, we're so used to talking about this stuff, so we will talk about it. Like for a lot of men who are, as you said, just starting this journey, it's like they're going to lurk for a long time, watch it, think it. Then maybe they'll mention it to their mate, and then maybe a couple of their mates will chat about it. It's going to be a rolling ball. But I think for every, you know, one woman who comments, there's probably 10 men who are like slowly internalizing it. And the other thing is, I think we need to make it like fucking hot to be a man who's open, like with their feelings. My favorite thing, I don't know if you're following the drama of Benny Blanco.
Yeah.
Selena Gomez, right? Mm-hmm. They are popping off all over the internet. Everyone is like, this is the perfect man. And 6 months ago, or however long, when they got engaged, everyone was like, oh my God, I don't get it. Like, he's not traditionally good looking mm-hmm. in the way that, say, Justin Bieber was. Like, people are going, these are very different men. And now everyone's like, this is the man we want. And it's like, maybe that's the message. It needs to be, yeah, you can get girls with, you can get a certain kind of girl with a big business, loads of money, a Ferrari. You can also get a certain kind of girl who's fucking hot, like Selena Gomez, and a billionaire, if you're like a decent human being.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw the follow-up video that I made about the TikTok that went viral, the one that you sort of discovered me from. But I said, you know, if you're a young boy, just look at the comments on that video, because the comments are just loads of women saying, this is so hot, this is so attractive, why can't I find a man like this? And I said, look, I'm in a relationship, so I can't engage with any of this. But for those of you that are single and you want to understand how to actually attract women, there is another way that's not what you're talking about, Ferrari, big business, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, like we need to go back to the funny guy.
The
funny guy, historically, it's the funny guy who gets laid at the party.
Damn.
Like you can laugh someone's pants off, and we need to make it hot and horny to be emotionally available.
I couldn't agree more.
This is the last one. We took a real detour there. The last one is normalizing men going to therapy.
Yeah, I think that one speaks for itself, obviously. So yes, I can only say my experience is I'm a lot happier. I was already happy, on my way to having a happy, fulfilling, successful life. It just sped up that process for me.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining me and being so open. It's like a lovely glimmer of hope in being on the internet as a woman. When I see your content, I'm always going from like a comment, which is like, no one cares about your opinions. And then I'll see yours and I'm like, oh, that's nice.
No, nice, that's nice to hear. Yeah. Dude, yeah. I'm trying to play my part.
I appreciate it. And yeah, where can people find your account?
On Instagram and TikTok, it's OJHNYN.
OJHNYN.
It's just Johnny muddled up. People are always like, what is that? Yeah, OJHNYN.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been great.